Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture with me, Dashran Johan. The Paralympic Council of Malaysia and the All Women's Action Society, also known as AWAM, have signed a memorandum of understanding which will address issues of gender-based violence such as sexual harassment, rape, and workplace discrimination among those in the PCM, whether it's athletes, coaches, team managers, etc. So what we're going to be doing today is trying to get a better understanding of the sporting landscape in Malaysia in regards to gender-based violence and the importance of this memorandum. So to provide their insights, I have on the line Nisha Sabanayagam, the Program and Operations Manager at the All Women's Action Society, as well as Richard Wee, who is a sports lawyer. So welcome to the show, guys. How are you doing?
Hi. Thank you very much. Hi.
Thank you for having us.
Let's jump right in. Nisha, let's start with you. When y'all say gender-based violence, what exactly does this encapsulate?
Okay, so I'll try to give you an explanation as simple as possible that everybody can digest. Gender-based violence is actually it's a very negative phenomenon that's deeply rooted in gender inequality. It is violence that is directed against a person simply because of their gender. And just to point out to people, both women and men experience gender-based violence, but the majority of victims are women and girls. And the root main reason why gender-based violence happens is because they are based off, they happen because of unequal power relationships, and sometimes also because people have specific ideas on how a gender should behave, and you know, one gender is weaker than the other, therefore I have power over this gender. It's that kind of mindset that encourages and is the cause of gender-based violence.
And these violent acts do not necessarily have to be sexual, am I correct?
Yes, absolutely. It does not have to be physical, does not have to be sexual. You can also cause gender-based violence through causing a lot of mental distress to a person. There's also been lots of talk about, you know, causing financial constraint to a person, like, for example, a husband taking away a wife's salary completely without her permission. That is also something that is considered gender-based violence.
Okay, and before we dive deeper into the Paralympics and, you know, the memorandum that you guys have signed, talk to me about the current landscape of sports in general. Maybe Richard, you can chime in here as well. Based on your observations, do athletes and, you know, other members in the industry, we're talking about coaches, team managers, do they in general face a lot of gender-based violence?
Okay, so I'm going to answer only what I know, but I think actually Richard can actually provide you with a better picture. Obviously, for us, the issue of gender-based violence in sports is based off the cases that come to us or the complaints that come to us. And to be honest, ourselves did not have that clear a picture of gender-based violence in sports until we received a complaint from an athlete who was actually being sexually harassed by her coach, okay? The girl was 19 years old. The coach was probably in his 50s.
Okay.
And, yes, and it was so bad that the girl actually at some point had to quit the team because she couldn't handle it. But she came to us and we supported her through the process. And what was interesting was we actually reached out to the Kementerian Belia dan Sukan, KBS, because this particular female athlete was actually somebody who was doing sports for her state. So obviously the Kementerian was involved. And the Kementerian, I'm really happy to say, KBS was just really so supportive in helping us to get this some closure for this case. And that's how our relationship with Kementerian Belia and Sukan started in terms of sexual harassment in sports. And based off our relationship with them and based off of us also speaking to other athletes and also our engagement with the Paralympic Council Malaysia, it is safe to say that, you know, sexual harassment is quite rampant in sports and in the sports arena. And what's really interesting, and I think maybe Richard also can probably support me with this, is that boys actually get sexually harassed more in the sports arena than girls.
Yeah, Richard, this statistic that Nisha brought up, there was a research done by College Polytech Mara on 422 athletes in 2017, and 15.9% admitted to, you know, having experienced some form of sexual harassment in sports. And a considerable chunk of these victims or survivors happen to be men, 19%, I believe, compared to 11% of female athletes. Does this statistic shock you?
I must say that this is the first time I've seen a specific statistics about sexual harassment for sports.
Okay.
But as someone who's been involved in sports for the last few years, I'm not oblivious to the stories and complaints. And in fact, in my professional capacity, we've had to deal with a few cases ourselves where the victims have come to us for assistance. So to say whether I'm shocked or not with the statistics, I'm just more upset that it's happening. Every time such a case comes in, I really get angry because here we are trying to build a sporting nation to win a gold medal or top three, strive for excellence, stay away from drugs, stay away from unhealthy. I mean, the whole idea of sports is to stay away from unhealthy incidents.
Yep.
So being a lawyer involved in this area, while I wear the hat of a lawyer, but I also most of the time wear the heart of a sports person that you want to get things, you know, you want to get things right. So yeah, I am quite upset looking at the statistics. I would say that I'm not surprised that it has happened because I personally known about it.
That's really sad, isn't it? But where do these gender-based violence or, you know, harassments usually take place? Is it during tournaments? Is it during, you know, the internal training camps? Is it other athletes? Or is it trainers? Is it people much higher up?
Well, from what I can see so far, it seems that most of the time, incidents happen between, not just between two sides of the sex, but really about who's in charge and who's not.
Yes, it's all about power play at the end of the day.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's
really,
what we notice.
Yes, and, really good point, Richard.
And it's not really also about during a particular time. It can happen anytime. And unfortunately, yeah. And I will applaud a lot of sports association, particularly the major governmental sports organization like ISN, MSN. They are both under the umbrella of KBS, the Kementerian Belia dan Sukan. So ISN and MSN is well known for stepping up to try and protect the athletes. Of course, there have been some incidents where it looks like the other way around. Those cases are still ongoing at the moment. But generally, what I can see is that the culture within the administration of ISN and MSN and KBS, and one more is the OCM, Olympic Council of Malaysia. The culture is to stop harassment. They are not very compromising in trying to catch the person who's doing it.
Okay.
Well, that's interesting to hear, and I'm really happy to hear that. So based off our experience, we have received complaints, and we've also discussed cases with relevant authorities where the harassment happens. The perpetrators can actually be the coaches. The perpetrators can actually be other athletes. The perpetrators can also actually be higher up administrative authorities. I will agree with Richard in the sense that the agencies of the Kementerian, when we do approach them and we talk about this, especially when we bring specific cases, they are quite serious in trying to support us. But unfortunately, it's still something that's still happening. But Awam recently just met with all the agencies in the Kementerian because the minister insisted on it. And the minister is actually also pushing for them to work together with us. So I see some progress in all of us actually coming together in making sure that there are lesser number of cases. And one of the biggest challenges that I think we all have, and probably Richard will also agree with me on this, is that it's quite difficult to get people who have been sexually harassed, especially if they are men or boys, to come forward and actually make that report.
Why do you think it's difficult for people to come forward especially for men?
Well, because this is the narrative that goes out there that, you know, sexual harassment only happens to women. So it's a women's issue. So when it happens to a man, you know, it's kind of like, oh, you know, it happened to you because you're not manly enough, or, you know, because you have like very feminine attributes. But that's not true, right? Mm. Sexual harassment is actually an issue that happens to everybody. It's not gender specific. It's a societal issue. It's not a women's issue. The other thing why men and also women are a little bit reluctant to come forward is because there's no real encouragement. There are no real proper, transparent, easily accessible channels for them to use when they need to make this report. And don't forget, and I think this was also mentioned by Richard earlier on, it usually happens in a situation where there is a sense of power play. So it's very difficult for an athlete, especially if she or he is a young athlete, let's say they're 13, 14 years old, and they're coached by somebody who is, you know, seen to be a really good coach. And this coach, he or she happens to be somebody who is a perpetrator. It's very mm-hmm. difficult for the person who is caught in that trap of being harassed to actually come forward and complain against this coach, because everybody sees this person as the coach, you know. So that's why the best thing to do here is to actually talk about, you know, the issue of sexual harassment. Don't make it a taboo subject. Talk about it. Tell everybody that it's something that happens and it's something that we all can work together to fix. And all sports associations, and this, of course, goes beyond the sports arena, all organizations and associations, so should actually have good policies that are able to handle sexual harassment cases. And these policies should also be something that everybody involved in the organization is aware exists. They are aware that such a policy exists. They are aware that it's a working policy. They are aware that when they make a complaint, it will be taken seriously and not swept under the carpet.
You bring up an interesting point about the importance, you know, to discuss matters about gender-based violence and, you know, things like sexual harassment more openly. Does the current landscape not allow for these type of discussions?
So it depends. It depends on where you're at. If you're like, you know, let's say, for example, if you're on Twitter, right, and you are somebody who is very active on Twitter, Twitterdom allows a lot of people to talk about sexual harassment. Okay, so people on Twitter are very educated about, you know, what to do when you're sexually harassed, you know, what kind of emotions you go through, who you can approach if you need help. But if you're not somebody who's of that particular segment of society, for example, if you are in schools that are on the outskirts of the Klang Valley, not everybody is aware of what sexual harassment is all about. So then they don't talk about it. And then when an incident happens, it could even be an isolated incident that happens, then people don't know how to deal with it. And one of the weird things about people who have been sexually harassed is the first thing that they feel is they feel a sense of shame. And that's something that I think we've all been taught, whether it's sexual harassment or rape or sexual violence, that when you are the victim or survivor, you somehow you know, end up feeling, the first feeling that you get is a sense of shame. So that sense mm-hmm. of shame actually stops you from talking about the issue. And then a lot of people in authorities don't want to talk about the issue because it's like opening the Aladdin's cave. You know, once we talk about it, cases will come forward. Once cases will come forward, how do we deal with these cases? Because they don't know how to deal with cases, right? And it's not their fault. It's just because when there's not enough awareness and training that's being carried out about how to deal with sexual harassment and how to prevent it. So that's one of the things that AWAM is trying to do. You know, we're trying to spread the word. We give out a lot of trainings. We do a lot of training of trainers so that we have the multiplier effect. And of course, you know, the sexual harassment bill that is hopefully we are advocating for it to be tabled in November. The sexual harassment bill will encourage all organizations, in fact, will make it a must for all organizations to have their own sexual harassment policy internally, and to also make sure that everybody is aware of what the policy consists of and what to do if they experience sexual harassment or if they witness sexual harassment happening within their organization.
Richard, Nisha brings up the sexual harassment bill and how that could potentially change the landscape in a very impactful way. But looking at it currently, are there no laws or regulations in place to protect athletes or, you know, people in the sports industry in general against gender-based violence or sexual harassment or harassment of any sort for that matter?
You know, when it comes to sports and this unfortunate menace of sexual harassment, there are two elements of area of law that you must look at. Of course, before you look at sports law, and in fact, I'm going to talk a little bit about esports afterwards. It's a big, big problem in esports. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to the laws first, you got to look at the national law. So like in the recent 2018 Winter Olympics in Korea, the Olympic Council already issued out a very affirmative and strong charter. And in fact, there's a code about anti-sexual harassment. But at the end of the statement, the code, it still refers to the Korean law. So if you end up grabbing another athlete in a very uncompromising way in Korea, then the Koreans can arrest you and charge you in Korean court. So that's the first area that you must first look at. Mm. So in Malaysia, yes, there are some cases, there are some areas of law which will we can seek protection from. The general laws of the penal code, assault, and you know, if you're an employment, under employment, there are under employment act, there is specific provisions under employment. We sometimes advise athletes, because athletes are seen to be employment sometimes, you know, they're contracted to play for a particular club, so it looks like an employer-employee situation, therefore attracting the laws of employment in Malaysia. So we also look at that. But I also welcome the, it should have been passed under the earlier government, but as you know, we went through a change of government, so that's this right. was delayed. And I think the current government seems to want to follow what the Pakatan's government was doing. So good on Perikatan, they're going to table this, it will be good for the Malaysians. So that's a general law. But when it comes to sports, I already gave you a slight indication there. One of the best places for us to refer to, of course, is the International Olympic. So that is where, in a way, the mother of sports laws all will come from there. See? So we normally look at IOC for guidance. So IOC, as far back as 2007, they already issued out consensus statements about anti-harassment. They have quotes. They have even put up comments and statements and guidance in their website on how to stem and stop harassment in sports. And of course, during Olympic Games, they actually got codes where you have to follow. And if the athlete doesn't comply, then the athlete can either be suspended, thrown out of the game, or even asked to leave the country, unless you're from Korea. But if the tournament is held in Korea, they can ask you to leave. So you're expelled from the tournament. And of course, sometimes you get banned for many, many years, sometimes banned for life. From sports. So these are things which can be done. And in fact, in recent years, we have read some horrendous and unfortunate incidents on our gymnastic women in US. And yes. In Malaysia, we have the diving team of women diving team in Malaysia. There have been some cases on. So we always study those cases and see how the authorities take up the cases, and what is good we learn from, what is not good we tell them not to do that again. So these are cases that we become a guidance for us. Now on esports, harassment has been really, really bad because it's mostly online. Girls who play, mostly are girls who are the victims of harassments. Ladies and girls who are either streamers, commentators, or they are players themselves, they are harassed. And recently I held a webinar about this topic, and it garnered tremendous traction and a lot of expression of concern from the citizens about this. And I'm personally hoping that the authorities will take up more action to protect the esports community. Because at the end of the day, they just want to play the game, not to be harassed.
Okay, I would love to continue having this discussion with you, but we do need to take a quick break for now. This is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture. I'm Dashran Johan, and I'm joined on Zoom by Nisha Sabanayagam, the Program and Operations Manager at the All Women's Action Society, also known as AWAM, as well as Richard Wee, who's a sports lawyer. And we are basically having a discussion on gender-based violence that is prevalent in the Malaysian sporting industry, as well as talking about the significance of the Memorandum of Understanding, which was co-signed by the Paralympic Council of Malaysia, as well as the All Women's Action Society. So, Richard, recently AWAM President Prabalosani Arivandan said that more than half of whom experience sexual harassment faced it at international meets. So when incidences like these happen overseas, when our athletes or whoever, the coaching staff and all, are following these athletes overseas, who is supposed to be in charge of regulating tournaments so that these kind of things don't happen? And who is supposed to be in charge of investigating the matter? Is it the governing bodies of the sport? Can you help us sort of understand this?
In fact, that's a really good question that was covering a lot of areas. So when you organize an international meet like the Olympics, for example, the rules and regulation will include the regulating the behavior of the athletes among themselves. And in some of these instances in international Olympics, international tournaments, it is not just about the person in control harassing the person who's not in control. It's not just about that. It's sometimes the other athlete, the other coach of the other country, they meet there, things get out of control and something silly happens. So we have noticed that too. So the governing laws for that situation will, number one, be the local government of that country, like what I told you earlier about the game in Korea. So let's use the last Olympic Games, the Winter Olympics. The first people who can bring the law upon you will be the local authorities of that country. Then, if you look at the Olympic, or let's say if it's football or volleyball or a netball competition, whatever the tournament of the world competition, then the organizer can expel the player, for example, or suspend the player. But these are internally what the tournament organizer can do. Then comes the governing body itself. So once the tournament is over, the meet is over, and let's say a complaint is lodged to the governing body of that tournament or that sports, that governing body also can take on another action with sufficient evidence. The disciplinary proceedings can suspend the relevant person or even expel or ban the person.
Can you all shed some light on parasports specifically? Are the circumstances similar?
Okay, so unfortunately with the parasports situation, I don't really have any statistics. And to be honest with you, when we first started working on really pushing out trainings on sexual harassment awareness and prevention, we did not even think about people who were physically disabled. And that shows our lack of inclusiveness is so ingrained in us that even an organization like AWAM, that goes out there and trains people on sexual harassment awareness and prevention, we ourselves did not think about the fact that actually, there's a whole segment of society that nobody is reaching out to. We were quite lucky, like I told you, because the Kementerian Belia and Sukan, invited us to join them in their national action plan for women in sports. And then the issue of sexual harassment came out. We brought it up. And then, after the meeting, we had various people from different agencies coming to us and say, okay, you know what? We want to work with AWAM because, there are issues of sexual harassment cases. There's talks, there's some real concrete cases. There's some talks about, harassment happening, but we're not getting people to come forward and talk to us about it. So we obviously need Awam to come in and give us some training. And that's how we actually had the hookup with the Paralympic Council of Malaysia. They have an amazing secretariat. There's five of them. And five of them are volunteers. They all have full-time jobs, but they're so utterly passionate about the work that with the athletes. And it's such a sheer joy for us to work with them and so inspiring as well. Because really, you know, this is one of the few collaborations that we have where people come to us and they say, yes, come over and give us training. But these people were, this particular secretariat were like, come over, give us training, let's sign an MOU, let's make it something that's systematic and sustainable. I just really love working with them, and I feel like our collaboration with them is something that we should use as a model for further collaborations with other organizations as well. And so we have a one year training plan with them that includes workshops, but we're also going to talk about forums and seminars. We're also going to provide counseling services to their athletes. You know, if any of them, you know, may not want to make reports of sexual harassment or gender-based violence, but may want to just talk to us about, you know, feelings and emotions about, you know, being marginalized or even being survivors of sexual harassment and not necessarily wanting to bring a report. Because, you know, for I think para athletes, being able to represent the country, you know, in a sport is such a big deal for them, and it's such a great and huge golden opportunity. So I think it's also very difficult for them to bring forward cases because, you know, they just don't want to, you know, mar their careers, right? They don't want to cause any problems. So we always encourage people to come forward, but we realize that it's not easy. It's not easy for somebody to come forward, you know, let alone an able-bodied human being. So I'm thinking it might be even more difficult for, you know, somebody who's not 100% able-bodied to come forward and talk to us about issues. So that's why we don't really have that many statistics to share with you. So all I have now is, you know, the fact that we've had one or two cases. We have a secretariat from the Paralympic Council who's just all out about making sure that their athletes have a really safe space. And we just signed the MOU, I think 2 weeks ago, and we're going to move forward with our first trainings sometime the last quarter of the year.
Yep. Richard, based on your observations, would you say that the circumstances are similar when it comes to para sports? You brought up esports earlier. Is this another industry where you see similar and unfortunate patterns?
Unfortunately, Dash, I am also limited by statistics. We're not very clear on the extent of the situation in para athletes and para games. Although I'm quite certain it happens, but the extent, I'm not sure. But in fairness, the International Paralympic, the para version of IOC, they issued a statement way back in 2008. So you see, both the World Olympic Organization, they are well prepared. They've already seen this problem and they've started addressing it long ago. But of course, you know, it takes time to get things right, and then there are always stubborn people involved, and then there are characters involved. Sports is not as easy as just taking them out. There's always some issues of the character being bigger than the sports. Those are the things we have to deal with. But both the International Olympic and the International Paralympic, they have already addressed this issue by coming up with their own codes. So for the Paralympic side, it was in 2008, where the IOC came out in 2007. Where they even address what can be done, sanctions that you may address, the kind of penalty that can be meted out, etc., etc. So that is what I have so far, but unfortunately, I do not have statistics to support whatever I'm saying at the moment.
So that brings us back to a significant memorandum that has been signed between AWAM and the Paralympic Council of Malaysia to fight gender-based violence in para sports. You touched on what inspired this move. So now let's talk about what exactly is the objective of this memorandum of understanding, and how will AWAM go about achieving it?
Okay, so the whole objective behind this memorandum of understanding is first to bring about awareness of what is sexual harassment, not just to the athletes, but also we're talking about coaches, we're talking about staff of the Paralympic Council of Malaysia, we're talking about visitors and third-party partners or collaborators of the Paralympic Council of Malaysia. For them to be aware of what is sexual harassment and for them to be aware of how to prevent sexual harassment if they can. Having a policy and having training classes, having workshops, talking about sexual harassment are all actually preventive tools because, you know, it creates a sort of barrier against perpetrators. When people are more aware about what is sexual harassment, when people are more aware about what action they can take, this makes them a lot more empowered and they can actually stand up against their perpetrators. The whole process of our MOU also involves us doing this, as I said earlier, for an entire year. And it's about speaking to athletes about what is sexual harassment, speaking to athletes about how they can address the issue if it happens to them or if they see it happening to somebody else. And it's not just athletes, it's also to coaches, it's also to staff members, it's also to team managers, it's technical administrators, it's association administrators. It's basically a real holistic agreement to just cover the topic of gender-based violence and to ensure ultimately that all these Paralympians have a safe space.
I think that's a very, very important first step. Richard, when you hear about the memorandum that has been signed, what do you think is the significance of this?
Well, this is definitely a positive step forward. I think we need to get the, and not just sports, even for our daily community lifestyle, that we need organizations, stakeholders, people with the relevant skills to come in and stop this. And having positioning people like AWAM, and there are many other organizations like AWAM, and AWAM is one of the organizations which I used to work with when I was a lawyer for human rights cases those days. AWAM, WAO, and
Richard, SIS. We are all friends.
It's good to have, I'm not just giving lip service, it's really, really important to have someone with the skills and experience like AWAM to come in into an industry like sports, because it really goes to show that sports means business. It's not more just talk, you know, it's not more just talk.
And, exactly.
You know, let's try to make it look safe, but it's not really safe, you know.
Yes, we have cases of people coming in to us 10 years after they've been sexually harassed because they still feel so much emotional and mental disturbances because of what happened to them, like, you know, 10 years ago. Can you imagine going through your life with such a state just because somebody did not care about your personal well-being and the fact that there was probably just not enough laws or channels for this person to actually get proper justice?
Yeah.
So it's really quite it's quite traumatizing for all these survivors of sexual harassment.
Just before we wrap up, because we are running a little short on time, I want to hear from both of you. Going forward, what sort of action would you like to see the Ministry of Youth and Sports take to help prevent instances of gender-based violence in the sporting industry? Nisha, let's start with you.
Okay, so obviously I would very much like the Ministry of Youth and Sports, and I think they're already starting to do this, to support the tabling of the sexual harassment bill in Parliament in the sitting that's coming up in November 2020. They should really, really go all out to push for this because it really affects their constituencies. You know, all the athletes and all the coaches and all the administrators that are involved in the sports arena. And sexual harassment is merely a step away from sexual assault. You know, the minute they feel they can get away with this little bit of harassment, this little bit of physical harassment, and then it gets a little bit, it sometimes can blow up to a situation where even online harassment can cause somebody to commit suicide. As you know, we all know with, you know, recent cases of young girls committing suicide because they've been harassed online. So very much I would like to see the Ministry of Youth and Sports support the tabling of the sexual harassment bill in Parliament in November 2020. Go all out for it. It's a first step. It's not a difficult step, but it's a step that carries a lot of significance to it and can create a process of years of ensuring that situations of gender-based violence are minimized?
Richard?
Well, actually, to be fair to the Ministry of Youth and Sports, over the last three or four ministers that we can track back, and I'm sure even the earlier ministers would have similar principles, but what we can track back in the archives or the internet is that ministers as far back as YB Khairy and the last minister, YB Sadiq, and the current minister, YB Rizal, they have always maintained the anti-harassment position. YB Khairy, for example, has been very openly battling it. And YB Sadiq, for example, when they had the issue about the Sharia-compliant dress code, he came up strongly against it. He felt that, you know, that is actually, in a way, curtailing the freedom of a lady to dress. These are things, it's already happening. But I would say that one of the maybe progressive, another progressive step to take, and I would implore the current minister to consider this, is to form a, not necessarily a form a committee or work process, but a form a direction, some sort of a affirmative anti-harassment movement. For example, like for esports, they must come up with a strong vocal statement which will effectively be supported by organizations like the police and the MCMC and the relevant association themselves, that we won't let this happen.
Yes, and I think that if you actually have just one example of a case where, you know, you took proper action against the perpetrator and that has stopped the perpetrator from actually being able to harass anybody else, that can already be such a preventive action to other perpetrators to think twice before they actually want to harass these girls.
On that note, Nisha, Richard, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Cheers.
That was Nisha Sabanayagam, the Program and Operations Manager at the All Women's Action Society, also known as AWAM, as well as Richard Wee, who's a sports lawyer. And we were discussing issues centered around gender-based violence that's prevalent in the sports industry, and also talking about the significance of the Memorandum of Understanding that was co-signed by AWAM and the Paralympic Council of Malaysia. So if you missed any part of this episode or any previous Live and Learn episodes, you can check out our podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, and you can also subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Once again, I'm Dashran Johan, and this has been Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.